Now, more Ebling and You on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
Welcome back. Jack Ebling, Scott Eckersley, Ebling and You, 1320 WILS. Scott, since we started this show in mid-November of 2006, over 2,500 guests, and we've had some of them that made headlines, and I always get the question, who's your favorite guest? And it's one of the easiest questions I've ever been asked, and it's our next guest, live from Beijing, China, my son Zach. Hi, Zach. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
Well, you are you're just back from Seoul, Korea, and you were there for an international conference on adoption. We're going to do a couple of segments on adoption this half hour and be joined by Ted Kluck in just a few minutes. But tell us a little bit about that experience representing adoptees from all over the world.
Sure. You know, first, it's quite an honor to be able to attend a conference like this. Obviously, as you mentioned, I live and work in Beijing these days, and so making the skip over to Korea is very, 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 very convenient. Also, not going to break the bank doing it. You know, to be actually in Seoul, this is my second time attending what's called the IKAA, okay, or International Korean Adoptee Conference, and so it was just an overall fantastic experience. I did have a chance to represent the Korean adoptees that were actually adopted and born after 1985. And so, okay, you know, to be able to be a part of the panel there at the end of the conference was an extra special opportunity, the icing on the cake, if you want to say.
As a panelist and a speaker, obviously you got to share your impressions of adoption, and every adoptee has a different story to tell, but you mentioned that the tone of the conference was not entirely positive, and this is not a controversy-free issue. There are a lot of people who wonder whether international adoption is a good thing. Can you talk about that?
Certainly, yeah. It's one of those issues, Deb, where you have to look at it from both sides. Essentially, I think the issue with a lot of the speakers at the conference, a lot of whom were academics, PhD holders, extremely brilliant in their fields, they would, I guess, focus more on the issues surrounding adoption, why adoption exists, mm-hmm, and they would talk about some of the social structures in place. For example, you're not providing single mothers with the kind of support that they need. We can all relate to that, but you know, as an adoptee myself, I feel extremely fortunate. I think that to speak on an issue like this, personally, you know, an adoptee does not need a PhD to speak on it. We've been living and studying it, I guess, for however many years you've been alive. So I think that overall, the kind of the quiet undertone of the conference was that, okay, international adoption, it's not a foolproof system. There's some negative things surrounding the existence of it. We should be cautious of it, you know, and at the, personally, I can relate to some of the issues they were bringing up. Again, as we just mentioned, women's rights issues and government support. But you know, I think on the whole, you have to look at the children involved. And I think that the result is positive in most cases, and they cited 75% of placements are actually positive. So,
our guest is Zach Ebling, a budding entrepreneur in Beijing, China, and a delegate to the International Korean Conference on Adoption and number one son. Zach, when we talk about the experience of the individual adoptees, I imagine that you got to spend a lot of time with them and hearing some of the great inspirational stories and maybe some of the horror stories as well.
Certainly, yeah. The other adoptees are fantastic, and to tell you the truth, it's the reason you know, it's the reason I went in 2007 or 2008. And it's the reason I went back this year. You know, to be able to be with a group of 500 just exceptional young people. You know, they also happen to be a Korean adoptees. It's just amazing stories all around. I'm trying to think. The most amazing thing I think is you go to, you come from Beijing, okay, or if you come from the U.S., you go to Seoul, South Korea. Mm-hmm. You see a person that looks pretty much Korean, mm-hmm, okay, or Asian,
right?
And you're looking at him, and then you assume, okay, wow, is this person going to speak English? You walk up to him, you introduce yourself cautiously, and then all of a sudden you find, hey, this person does speak English, but this Korean-looking person is speaking pretty good English with a slight tinge of a Danish accent, and then you realize, wow. I'm not in Lansing, Michigan anymore. I'm not in Beijing, China anymore. Heck, I don't even know if I'm in Seoul anymore. I don't know who I'm talking to, but that's probably the impression that most people get when they see a Korean American in the U.S. I'm guessing. So
I'm thinking that most Americans figure that all of international adoption winds up in the United States, and you mentioned a Danish accent. Did you find a lot of Korean adoptees who had gone to other countries?
Certainly, yeah, certainly. The second largest contingent of adoptees were actually from Denmark. Outside of that, let me think here. France also had a reasonable representation at the conference. They also had representatives from, I believe, a couple from England, Australia, all over. Norway as well. Norway and Sweden also had large representations there too. So, excuse me. Yeah, certainly a worldwide thing, a worldwide issue, international adoption, especially vis-a-vis Korea.
I think now you find certain countries tend to come and go with this, and it kind of goes in waves for a while. Korean adoption was the rage, and then China, and we know that's been very successful for a lot of friends, and also European adoption. You're going to hear the pluses and minuses of that in just a couple minutes from Ted Kluck, who had two beautiful children and then had a nightmarish experience in an effort to get a sibling there. But you probably heard some people talk about things, and it might have been difficult for you to relate.
Sure, certainly, yeah. And, you know, it's interesting. You think about things differently. Just to first speak on a word you mentioned before, Ted, you know, talking about it was the rage to have a kid from this country, this country, this country. That's one of the issues, you know, to tie it all together that it is interesting to relate to. Talking about adoption as almost a fad, or you look at certainly certain countries, maybe in the 1960s or 1970s or 80s, it was Korea. Now it's certainly China, Russia. You know, in the 90s and early 2000s, it was certainly trending towards Africa. Maybe it's very interesting to see how people talk about this issue. You become much more sensitive to it. And that being said, I think people at the conference were, in general, not to say all of them, maybe 3 out of 10 people there, 30%, which is a much higher rate than the normal adoptee community elsewhere in the world that did not attend this conference. But many of them were ultra sensitive to terminology, to, I guess, what they viewed as a simplistic attitude towards adoption. I, however, would be in the camp of the majority, I guess, where still, you know, I'm saying, okay, that you can call it what you want, call it a fad, but I'm concerned with the result. And personally, I had a pretty good result. So I have a lot of people and things to be thankful for. And I think, you know, without international adoption, we can speculate, would your life have been better or not? But in the end, you know, your life is what it is, and I've got a pretty darn good one. So I'm not complaining.
Zach Ebling, our guest, speaking to us live from Beijing via Skype. And we had a similar experience yesterday with Dan Redford, who actually wound up staying at your apartment for a couple of days. And I think he is back in Shanghai now. But in terms of what young people can look forward to with international travel, it certainly has changed a great deal. Study abroad experiences. You turned that into a year at Kalamazoo College, and then as soon as you got your degree, you knew that you wanted to go back to Asia. What is the lure? Why is that so fascinating for so many young people?
Sure. I think, you know, Asia, and especially I'll say China now these days, is becoming a lure and attractive to many young people. There's a number of reasons. You know, it's obviously tied to the booming economies over in Asia. It's much more dynamic over here. Things are moving, they're robust, things are changing. You can be a part of that change, not from necessarily the ground level, but you can also be a part of that from, you can essentially enter the scene at the same level you might enter the scene at in America if you had been working for 5 or 6 or 7 years. So to give you a little perspective there. Also, you know, I haven't been back to work in the U.S. for a couple of years now, but the word on the street is that the job market is not the best it's ever been. Improving, which is a great thing. Hopefully it improves. It gets back to, you know, an even better situation very soon.
Right.
But, you know, in the time being, I think it's the natural course of things. And I think that it's a fantastic thing, Dad, for any young American to have the opportunity to go abroad and make a difference. Because I think in the end, that experience will transition very well back into the United States when you go back. And, you know, if you have a chance to represent the U.S. abroad, whether that be, you know, in Asia or if that be in Africa or another, any other part of the world, I think it's a gift. And it's something that I would certainly suggest, regardless, again, of wherever you decide to go, to get out and see how they do it in another area of the world, because in the end, you're going to end up contributing a lot more to whatever organization or group of people you end up working with in the long run. So,
well, we have had three interns or people who have worked with this show over the last couple of months who have taken advantage of this, and I think they've been in a combined 14 countries studying, and certainly you can tell the maturity level and the depth of experience that they have, and certainly a much different experience for university students. And if you are the parent of an entering freshman or sophomore and you're wondering if it's important for your son or daughter to have a study abroad experience, I can tell you firsthand, I would highly, highly suggest that you take advantage of that opportunity. Zach, great to talk with you again. And I know that you have great interest in Big Ten basketball. I can tell you that Michigan State, the number one ranked team in the country, and according to Sporting News, that's just out, and you'll be getting that in the next package that arrives in Beijing, and I hope to see you in November at the Maui Invitational.
Excellent. Okay, hope to be there too, Dad. It was great talking to you, and go State.
We'll be right back with more Ebling and You, 1320 WILS.